We now have United States against Franks. Mr. McKinley.
As you know, this is an appeal of a mail fraud conviction imposed following a half-day bench trial last December. The trial was, for the most part, the evidence of the trial was, for the most part, undisputed. Over the span of about a year and a half, Ms. Franks admittedly obtained checks made payable to her employer, turned around, deposited those checks into personal checking accounts at Key Bank. Key Bank, in turn, provided those checks to an interstate commercial carrier who transported the checks physically back to the various drawee banks on which the checks were drawn. I submit that the evidence established at trial established a textbook case of employee theft, embezzlement, that would be maybe appropriate for prosecution in state court, but for whatever reason, the government was bound to determine to make this a federal case. And as they say, when all else fails, charge mail fraud. I submit that the government has...
Well, actually, we used to think that if you indicted somebody and mailed them a copy of the indictment, you would raise it up on that.
But it has been construed almost that way in cases that I have seen involving the mail fraud statute, Your Honor. But here they have stretched it too far. I mean, 1341 casts a pretty broad net, but I submit here the government's theory really goes beyond the boundaries intended by Congress and goes beyond the contours of the Supreme Court in the cases of United States versus Kahn, United States versus Parr, and United States versus May. The government's primary problem here is... I'm sorry?
That's okay. Go ahead.
The government's primary problem here is that defendant Roxanne Franks had virtually unfettered access to the funds represented by those checks, either the day she deposited those checks or the day after. The government concedes as much in its...
Yeah, but okay. Even if the deposits from the fraudulent checks were available immediately,
yes,
before the checks were mailed to the issuing banks, wasn't the mailing essential to the overall scheme? Because 449 checks were deposited as part of the scheme. And if the earlier ones had not cleared after being mailed, the bank wouldn't have continued to make the later deposits available immediately.
Well, Your Honor, I think we need to look at each check individually, first of all. That each check, once it's deposited and the funds are made...
The crime is the scheme.
Right.
Right. My colleague's question is my big question, too. Your client was not charged with 449 counts.
Correct.
Your client was charged with one scheme. And if the crime is the scheme, don't we have to look at the totality?
Well,
and this is what happened in Schmuck, where the mailing of the titles was essential because otherwise you'd be out of business.
Let me answer this before I address Schmuck by addressing Kahn first. The argument that the government's argument here concerning whether the scheme was dependent upon the continuing transport of these checks is the argument that was rejected by the Supreme Court in United States versus Kahn. In that case, the court noted that it was absolutely no concern.
Kahn assumed, however, that the check could not be charged back. And in fact, it pointed to provisions of state law preventing the charging back of the check. And the world has changed. The Uniform Commercial Code was enacted after Kahn. Under Article 8 of the Uniform Commercial Code, these checks are charged back routinely.
Had the defendant, in this case, actually cashed the checks, put the money in their pocket at that time, I think what we would have had here was a case on all fours with the United States versus Kahn. What the government is asking this court to do is to draw a bright line and say that because she didn't actually cash the checks, because she didn't actually put the cash in her pocket upon each transaction, this case falls within the ambit of the mail fraud statute. Whereupon, however, if she had cashed the checks, it wouldn't fall within the ambit of the mail fraud statute. The point about Schmuck, that was the odometer rollback case where, as Your Honor noted, the mailing was comprised of the work to obtain titles for the various vehicles that had been sold to various dealers. And it was essential to keep that relationship between the defendant in that case and those dealers on good footing in order for him to get paid, in order for him to obtain the funds that was going to be the product of the scheme. But the court in that case, the defendant in that case, had argued Kahn, Mays, and Parr. And the court in that case said, look, those cases are distinct. They are distinguishable because the intrabank mailings in the Kahn case and the credit card invoice mailings in the Parr case, in the Mays case, involved little more than post-fraud accounting. And I submit that's what we have here. Once those checks were deposited.
Right, but we come back to the fact that that depends on the assumption that what we have is 448 frauds compared to the possibility that what we have is one scheme. Because if we just view this as one scheme, the mailing is not post-scheme. The mailing is occurring during the course of the scheme.
Yes, but the scheme was not dependent on the mailing. Once they had access to the funds, it's just like cashing the checks. If they had cashed each check individually, each component of the scheme would have come to fruition before the mailing actually occurred. And I submit that accordingly, the mailing here wasn't sufficient to establish that the scheme sufficiently related to the scheme so that it can be said that it really furthered its accomplishment in any way. If the court has no further questions, I'll take a seat.
Thank you, Mr. McKinley. Ms. Jackson.
Round two.
Yogi Berra would have said, deja vu all over again.
Absolutely.
Could I just start you out?
Yeah.
If the scheme involved only a few checks, maybe even like one, and the deposits were available immediately, would it still constitute mail fraud, given that she would have obtained the money before the mailing even occurred?
I think that would turn on whether it was her own count or if she went to, like, a check-cashing business. If she went to a check-cashing business where she had no vested interest in the post-accounting fraud part of it, we may not be here today with mail fraud. But the fact that she used her own bank account that had other funds in it is pivotal in this case because so long as she was at risk of losing the amount of the check in question because of other funds available in her account, yes, the mailings were incidental to the essential part of the scheme. Because until she had unfettered access to the proceeds, the scheme is not complete. So the fact that she used her own bank account in this case that and essentially commingled stolen money with or fraudulently obtained money with legitimate money, she was at risk of losing unfettered access to the proceeds of her scheme. So that is a pivotal thing. And when you look at her actions in this case, when you look at Ms. Frank's actions, you see the steps that she took that shows her awareness that she was not going to have unfettered access to these funds until much later on. There were 65 different occasions in which she deposited some combination of the 449 checks. She always put a legitimate check to herself or to her spouse or to a child on top of the stack. All the other checks were payable to her employer. But she hid the fact or tried to disguise the fact that there were checks payable to a third party that were going into her account. The bundling, the fact that she changed the endorsement between her legitimate checks and the checks that were payable to her employer shows that she was trying to hide from the bank their discovery that these checks were not hers. So she knew that they had to go through the whole banking process or the money would be charged out of her account. What was critical to the Supreme Court and to this court in its prior decisions is who was going to bear the loss if the scheme was detected. And in this case, she was going to bear the loss. if the scheme were detected at any point along the way, at any time if they'd seen a check payable to a third person that did not have the proper endorsement on the back, she was at risk of having everything blown and losing the proceeds of the money. We believe that the mailing was, or the interstate transportation of the checks in this case, was absolutely essential to the ultimate success of the scheme, and we would ask the court to find the mailing element to be sufficient and affirm the conviction in this case. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Mr. McKinley, and we thank you again for your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. You've been of assistance both to your client and to us. The case is taken under advisement.